Making references to Zambellieu 73, it's the address where Charles Henry Ford lived in Chania, Crete. And it was a beautiful house, 300-year-old harem of Pasha, governor of Crete. And his secondary harem kept a lot of concubines there. And there was a trap door for concubines who weren't nice that night. And he would pull the trap door and somebody will slide straight down into the basement with the goats. And I almost got into that because I was the naughty one. So that's how I know Harold, through Ira Cohen, through Charles Henry Ford, and through the late Ronnie Burke, who was also a poet in San Francisco and who took care of him at the end of his life. And now I want to introduce Judith Malina, who knew very well Harold North, and he actually stayed in her apartment in New York City. Yeah. Judith Malina.
Yeah. Woo!
That's right.
I like this brief poem elegy of Harold's because it reminds me of all the times when we spent nights and days and cruised in Washington Square Park, and we've been talking about the exotic islands and the exotic lands, and this is more about our neighborhood, where we are now, and where we're still trying to make poetry, as Harold always did when he lived with us up in West End Avenue, me and Julian Beck and Richard Stryker and sometimes 13 or 14 other people. it was a very creative time. Some of it was spent on very high endeavors. Some of it was spent in what do you call it when you conjure ghosts?
Seances.
We did seances all the time. I couldn't remember the word because I didn't believe in them, and I was in constant struggle about it. But that too was a form of poetry that we miss now. And all the. The 8-10 people around that big table that we levitated and that spoke to us in its knockings and movings, they're all dead now. They're all gone. So that there's a bridge between this time and that time. And this poem is called Elegy. Harold North. What is it that they say in rooms the music fills, where the bright intellectual talk shadow boxes the night? What is it that they say and unsay as the heart grapples and claws at dread and vulnerable? The head spirals from innocence. What the quick senses hear, involved as a fingerprint through streets that lead to twisted evenings. Night is, and for us all, in the maze we fall, forward to doors that close in labyrinths where pools drown us. Oh, the pale voices of Sansui Peace drinking the dark away. Here, as I walk beneath the elms, the drying leaves of shaking autumn saplings and the cold stone set square by the arch where Washington's stoic chin is thrust at the speeding cars. Each midnight face betrays its nympholeptic stare. Concrete benches bear the smokers posed in shadows with tense hands trembling toward the personal. But the fountain, the oval pool where summer children rejoice, yields journey's end. You go half-hearted. There is never the miracle of tenderness. You flinch from raw-fisted loneliness, pounding your penance home. Is this the legend? The emphasis of our consciousness? The lamps of Washington Square glare coldly on the cold rails, and the huge dogs savagely lunge away and tear the leash from anonymous guides who proudly ignore the night. So into the burning crater of night's fires that never go out. The windy flame of lust, the soul's bad habit thrust down the igneous gorge of neon, chromium and glass, held by what cyclic disease or compulsion of the nerves they hardly know. The dolls and intellectuals go so to the box-like rooms and toward the ice floes. I direct my gaze. The East River quietly flows. Whether I gaze or no.
Thank you. That was wonderful. Made me cry. I will bring now to the microphone, and I have to probably make it much higher, Max Black. Welcome him.
Hi, thank you. Can you hear this?
Yeah.
Do I need it? I love Harold Norse's work. I always did. I first read it in 1970 in England. It was published with Bukowski and Philip LaMancha in their little Penguin Poets, and I thought he was pretty great. And then he just kind of stayed underground until he was 92. I'm just going to read two pieces of his from this very worthwhile tome. This one I read at a reading a few years ago, and I just thought it was a very brave kind of poem.
Could you speak into the mic? Is that a book of collected poems of Harold's?
Yeah. And he was trying to sell it before. This is called, can you hear okay?
Yes.
I'm not a man. I'm not a man. I can't earn a living, buy new things for my family. I have acne and a small pita. I'm not a man. I don't like football, boxing, and cars. I like to express my feelings. I even like to put an arm around my friend's shoulder. I'm not a man. I won't play the role assigned to me, the role created by Madison Avenue, Playboy, Hollywood, and Oliver Cromwell. Television does not dictate my behavior. I'm not a man. Once when I shot a squirrel, I swore that I would never kill again. I gave up meat. The sight of blood makes me sick. I like flowers. I'm not a man. I went to prison resisting the draft. I don't fight when real men beat me up and call me queer. I dislike violence. I'm not a man. I've never raped a woman. I don't hate blacks. I don't get emotional when the flag is waved. I don't think I should love America or leave it. I think I should laugh at it. I'm not a man. I've never had the clap. Seems unlikely somehow, doesn't it? I'm not a man. Playboy is not my favorite magazine. I'm not a man. I cry when I'm unhappy. I'm not a man. I do not feel superior to women. I'm not a man. I don't wear a jockstrap. I'm not a man. I write poetry. I'm not a man. I meditate on peace and love. I'm not a man. I don't want to destroy you.
Hey!
And I'm just going to read one more, which happens to follow on. And I found a kind of a heterosexual love scene, so that kind of interested me. The ex-nun and the gay poet. I don't know who the woman in question is here, but I'm sure it must. I'm sure Valerie could tell us from the vast knowledge of Harold Norse. I'm really, was rather shocked, Valerie, that you outed his wig. I always thought he had such a wonderful head of hair. The ex-nun and the gay poet. They talked about meditation and extrasensory perception as her eyes kept straying to the black hair on his chest where his shirt was open. And he talked of his new poems as his eyes kept straying to the slit in her crotch where her slacks were tight. They smoked Lebanese hash, her first turn-on, and she slumped a little and said, "Nothing is happening." And he laughed, watching her, and she said, "I feel as if our bodies are moving toward each other like two sticks in a bathtub of their own volition." And he reached over, cradling her neck in his arm, and said, "They are," and didn't wait to remove his pants. That night they drifted in a twilight zone with Adam and Eve, fish and amoeba, sperm and egg. She spoke of the convent in Boston where the nuns were in love with the body of Christ, spread-eagled on the crucifix and very naked. The nuns did strange things as they passed each other silently in the hall, like flicking the habit against each other's breasts, which made them horny and quite crazy. So she quit. She dropped the habit and went in search of a real man. She worked at the US Army base in Libya, but had troubled dreams of the Boston Strangler and woke up screaming because she dreamed of a man under the bed. One night, he was in the bed, but he wasn't the Strangler. It was a GI, then a camel driver, then a string of camel drivers, then a camel, or was it a dream? She felt the need of something more spiritual, and having read Lawrence Dorrell, she fled to Athens to find herself. But the Greeks had nothing to say except, "I love you, 50 drachmas, please." So she drowned her dreams in bottles of ouzo with male hustlers in tourist tavernas, where they got money from other men for services rendered and gave it to her for services rendered. It wasn't very spiritual, and she was losing her mind, trying to find a way of giving and receiving that wasn't physical. It looked like curtains for the ex-nun from Boston, and then it happened. "I met you," she said. "I hit the jackpot." She found her bliss with a gay American poet from Brooklyn.
Wow.
Thank you. Thank you very much. Thank you. That was great. I will bring now Shelley Miller, who is our friend, dear friend. She was part of the New Romantics, and she will really entertain you. So give her a hand, ladies and gentlemen. Shelley Miller.
Welcome to the Beat Hotel. It's such an honor to be here as I'm sort of a neo-beatnik and have been since the age of 11 or so, as some of you know. But I was so happy to be included in this. I'm a new but profound fan of his work. I just want to read you a little comment here. Let's see, these are notes on the back of one of the editions of the novella. Norse makes cut-up fiction his own, depicting a bizarre, hallucinogenic world of disoriented beings, catching the monstrous irrationality of human behavior. And as one dazzled German critic wrote, "At least as good as the barroom scene in Star Wars." I will read you a poem that he wrote called The Beat Hotel. In the old Beat Hotel, they're eating naked lunch, with every psychedelic meal sipping mescaline punch. Oh yeah, I want to room where beatniks used to dwell. You could always score at the Old Beat Hotel. A dragon guards the door, blue-haired Madame Rachou. It lets the hip, the cool, the ghoul, and the beautiful pass through. Sounds sort of like a Chelsea, doesn't it? Swedish girls with candles blazing in their yellow hair sing Christmas carols high upon the snaky, winding stair. Brilliant punks and geniuses scramble up our brains, cut up all our words and books, collage our joys and pains. Oh, let's turn back the cuckoo clock. Let's visit Gay Paris. Let's find the medieval street every girl and boy must see. The quaint and queer old flaky street that made beat history. Where lies the heart, rougit le cœur, long before you and me. They tore up every floor and made a first-class posh hotel. It ain't what it used to be no more. The old sleazy beat hotel. Near the leafy, lovely Boulevard Saint-Michel, where everyone was cool. Oh yeah, it's gone with the geniuses. Farewell, Old Beat Hotel. So hard to choose what poems to read. I wanted to do like 20 or 30. But I'm going to do this little one because I identify with it so profoundly, and so will all of you sexually precocious poets out there. Yeah. It's called 14, A Vision. Sleepless one night, I gazed from a window at the stars with awakening teenage wonder. Who am I? Where am I going? Why? Then levitated through infinite space, joining vast tides of women and men, nude bodies swirling round and round, soaring in waves of desire, blending in and out of each other, merging and separating again and again, writhing into birth, love, death, in a limbo of limbs, waves of desire, women and men and men and men, again and again, and women, in a limbo of love, in a film noir print of purgatory by Dante Alighieri and Gustave Doré, indelibly etched in my mind, when, many years later, I spoke of this to a famous, wise, old poet who said, only true poets have this vision at that age only. Thanks, Robert Graves. Again and again, I've never ceased to seek such ecstasy. Again and again in beautiful women and beautiful men.
Thank you, Shelley. That was great. I'm going to read the dedication poem to Harold Norse, and then I'm going to invite my friend Jeffrey Wright to read. This one is called Beat Angel Blues to Harold Norse. The cosmic hustler is now a pure spirit. And so are the masters of the dream machine. Norse continues to whisper from the great beyond, howling and writing the story of his crazy karma. Oh, hollow America, hollow America. The harder one hits, the deeper the sound in the passage underground, the virtual museum of the beats. They who have forgotten you so soon, a mission accomplished. Tears drop as red petals of a rose All roses cry, I wanna die, I wanna die. These are, there are no degrees of separation between Harold North and Ira Cohen, between him and Leonard Cohen, between Corso and Norso. His ghost still haunts the island of Hydra, sex and marijuana evenings with Xena, her spirit reincarnated in Harold, where he performs in a cafe purgatory for the hip elite of the generation beat. Thank you very much. And now I will invite to the microphone my friend Jeffrey Cypher Wright, our new romantic from East Village and the publisher of Live Mag.
Well, thank you, Valerie.
Here you go.
Oh, thank you. God, it's like a real treat to be here with such illustrious company. What can I say? Been a while. It's really great. It's a real treat and honor, Judith, Melina. What can I say? It's just rare. Okay. Let's see now. Well, Allen Ginsberg told me that, you know, one thing that he did envy me about was possibly about having sons or children, and children, you know. And that he wouldn't have that part of life. But for Harold Norris, I think, you know, if we're not his brother or his sister, we're maybe his children, because I feel like that, you know. So he did leave something behind, and we're here to carry it on. And, right?
Yeah.
And I see my poem has disappeared, my bookmark.
The Uncles.
Yeah, man, it was this big one right here. It disappeared. I'll find it. It's called Uncles. And I was teaching poetry, and I found this beautiful book. I had always revered the Beat Hotel, and I found this great book when it came out from Thunder's Mouth, In the Hub of the Fury Force. And I swore I thought it was the Fury Forge. You know how you update stuff like that. And I was looking for poems to teach, and I found one by Diane de Prima that listed the months with different lovers, January, February, March. And then I found this one called Uncles by Harold Norris. And I'm sorry, I'm just going to have to look here. Just take a second. Oh, God damn it. Excuse me. Anyway, it's about his five uncles. And that was on page 200 and something. And he lists his five uncles. And I had always wished this was something I could do, is just write poems like this about, you know, real things and all. And I'm just sitting here listening to, you know, all the stuff with Charles Bukowski that Max mentioned, and the lady, the madam that Shelley mentioned, and all the different people that... And I loved Iris' portrait that he had of Harold. And
why did you read something else?
Why did you lose my damn thing, man? I came all the way to your house over there. I dragged my sorry butt. I'm like doing 1,000 freaking ass things. And I spent all this time, and then it's just called Uncles.
225.
Bravo, bravo.
I knew it was 2-something.
225.
It is not. That's Rusty Smog of Evening.
You should read that.
I know, right? Yes, I practiced this for days.
Okay, 6 minutes are up. Yeah.
Thank you. All right, in that case, I will attend a poetry meeting. They canapes, gossip, drop some big names, drink a little. They are not young. The host looks bitter, wags a short white beard, calls on them one by one, in a circle, round the comfortable room. And his five uncles, there was like one named Mike, and they were like big boxers, and he ends it with like, you know, what are these big handsome guys? What's with you guys? He ends it. You know, this is not how the Jewish guy is supposed to be. Handsome, brave, boxers. This is my poem as a farewell to the Beats. And it's in my book, The Name Poems that Stephen Yuko published. And I appreciate that. I want to thank them, and Kat and Val and everybody. And this is a last call. call me. I will again to you run. My will to your words will turn like a vein. Oh, holy vessel, how low be thy friends, thy disciples today. Thy will be done. Run. Stand on your head. Get ahead of the storm, shifting due south. I miss your sweet mouth. Off safe to a haven are you sent, like glass spilling sand, like a rainbow in your veins. I adore you, your hour on the stage, love, your bright page. Oh God, I'm not gonna read it now that I talk. I'll just read a bit of it. Uncles, bootlegger, bookie, boxer, tout, Uncle Joe, the big-hearted tough, once he beat up, three-armed hood, single-handed without a gun, twice married, twice burnt, towards the end, he played the horses, faded out, broke in a Miami hotel. Oh, blue-eyed uncles, Uncle Mike, Uncle Lou, my uncle the taxi driver called Big Red. Now, I did want to end with this very short poem on the next page. Called The Guns from the Rooftops.
We're right in the middle of this.
Yeah. You can get it on Amazon, Steve.
$7.98.
It's on page 205. The guns from the rooftops are aimed at our hearts and genitals with deadly accuracy. There's someone out there, I tell you, who's the answer to your prayers. Errol North.
Thank you, Jeff. Sorry for the uncles.
Thank you, Doc.
I would like to invite Tom Walker. Tom Walker is a famous artist, actor, and poet. So give him a welcome hand.
Thank you. How does it go?
Just squeeze.
Just
squeeze,
squeeze that thing and pull it out. Good.
I'm going to read a little bit from the Beat Hotel, which we've talked so much about. Several short chapters. I think the one Harold liked maybe the most, he talks about it. I wrote Sniffing Keyholes in the Beat Hotel. It's about the big climax between Queen Zizi and Chief Melo. It has that wonderful word, jockstrapocalypse, in it. But I'm going to read from an earlier chapter called Strength and Health Circuit. And it's talking about some of the denizens in his life and in the hotel. So, okay. Aladdin rides on the genie's back, and Titania is queen of the fairies. No, that's Dennis, room 12. Ever see Fish Boy? No hands, no forearms, just flippers. Dennis says that boy don't need hands. Got everything you need. He'd give the Pope an erection. Rigid heterosexuality is a perversion of nature. Margaret Mead, she said it loud and clear. Think of the unnatural effort men make to suppress this feeling. When they look at a teenage boy, pure lust. There's a beauty of form and feature in a sweet teenage boy that appears only once in a lifetime, briefly, then disappears forever. Didn't William Blake say that? No, Mae West said that. No, that's what God said to Moses on Mount Sinai. It was an aside. I could understand being lust-crazed for Fish Boy. He's only 16. How did Dennis score? Pick up. The kid's peddling ass in the quarter, my dear. Country boy from the Dordogne. The peasants made fun of him, grabbed him, and fucked him in the barn or the field. Ran away. Can't fight with flippers. Got the reddest lips, smoothest skin, most flawless ass, the sexiest thighs, hottest hunk of meat. Makes you want to cream and dream and scream. Hey, you guys are supposed to be straight. Sweetie, straight is a state of mind, like being blind. So, my dear, God said, go down, Moses. And down she went. 11th commandment. Pope is a perversion, Mead says. Who needs it? must pray to resist teenage ass, says Pope. Nature is a perversion we must pray to overcome. Pope drools from acolyte's crotch, more papal bull. Church is a perverted unicellular animal, says Mead. Who needs this bullshit? And down she went. A little anthropology would go a long way. Drag the peasants out of the Middle Ages. Scumbags, screams the Pope, foaming with godliness. Wanna undermine our tax-free real estate dollars? Bob came too with a start. Dry leaves in echo chamber. Scraping sounds in his throat. You may have heard some of our ancestors, Mahler, Bizet, Ravel, some blood in our veins, if you can find one, that is. Mainline music monkey business runs in the family. Not quite finished. I'm 18. Absently. Dry leaves in his throat. So who needs religion? He ties up. Dropper fills with blood. Jesus, horrors fill me. Compressed engram shit from crazy Christers, compulsive controllers, death in the nuclear religion. Kinda zealous, you know, the way these Christ creeps are. They got the Bible fix, like Arab horrors got Koran death in moron country. The Jews got the blues, mosaic junk of dead ideals. Jeans, Jehovah's junkies spread nuclear junk in windbag street.
Thank you. That was great. I want to remind you that although the fiction makes total sense, that's how it actually happened on page 65. The first cut-ups appeared when Brian Geisen took several articles from the Paris Herald Tribune, the London Observer, the London Daily Mail, and Life magazine advertisement, sliced them down the middle, assorted them in a collage form, and that's how the cut-ups began. I would like to invite Steve Dalashinsky, but before that, I would just read you a little bit from this famous princess. It's called White Terraces, and it's a poem dedicated to Princess Zinaida Rakevsky, who is also the main character in The Sniffing Keyholes. So now that you have all these references, you know, you can work out the whole, you know, situation. They lived in Hydra, Corso, Harald Norse, Nanos Valoritis, who was is a Greek surrealist poet who has a house there. And actually, Onassis tried to buy Hydra, and Valoritis says, no, it's not for sale, man. But nevertheless, they got invited, and they went to Scorpio Island together with... and if you read, you know, his memoirs, every page has names like these. I mean, he picked up Marlon Brando and big, big names. You will enjoy it incredibly. And White Terraces, it's dedicated to this Princess Zinaida Rakevsky, who was beautiful, ruthless, dangerous, spendthrift, generous, selfish, violent. Princess tried everything from striptease queen, movie starlet, royal marriage, poetry and painting to become a Zen monk with a shaven head in Nepal, where she died mysteriously, thus ending her search for impossible enlightenment. Just as she was beginning to resemble Madame Blavatsky in her 40s, her spiritual double, but not her physical one, for Zina was slender, half charlatan, half magician. Zina had been busted for dope and prostitution, among other things, cut off from three vast fortune for her crimes, but at the end was a real artist, that is to say, talented and treacherous. I do her homage as an unforgettable bitch with class and charisma. She held court in the island of Hydra and in Athens when I last saw her. And this is the introduction to the poem. Thank you. And now, please give a hand to Steve Dalashinsky, who is going to help us to round up this evening. And then Kathy Georges is going to come to the microphone.
Round up song.
Hey.
Squeeze.
You like
That's
it?
For you, Harold Rosen. Harold Rosen. So great. Rosen the Wasp. Boy, I wish I thought of that with my name. I did my name backwards once at work. Yisnakala.
Yisnakala?
Still so fucking long.
Wow. That's great.
I was very happy when Val asked me to do this, except I had to admit to Val, except for buying lots of Harold Norse books, I buy lots of books, but I never read them. So. And when I was in Paris, I was with Ted Jones, who was a really good friend of mine, and he took Yuko and me to the Beat Hotel, and it's full of photos. And it's a beautiful place, except it's one of the most expensive places on the left bank. So, but it's nice. At least they keep the photos up on the wall. Before I read this poem that someone sent me through email when he heard about this and asked me to read it, he said it was a big influence on his life, a publisher in Minnesota named Michael Mann. I have greetings to everybody from Gerald Nicosia, who was just part of a big tribute to Harold Norse in San Francisco at the Beat Museum, and he said it was a really wonderful event that went great. And for any of you interested, Jerry wrote a piece, a tribute for Norse, that's in Time magazine. He even sent me the page, page 18, June 29th. So it was a successful. I went to the Beat Hotel 2 years ago, and what really amazed me, I had never known about Harold Norse's paintings, and I had met him once and we talked and he signed a couple of books for me, and I was really impressed by his paintings. They were really beautiful, very abstract, kind of, my brain remembers them as kind of cubistic, Kandinsky-esque, but I could be wrong because it was a couple of years ago, but I just remember they were really beautiful. Anyway, there are lots of Jewish mobsters, Jeffrey, so don't worry about the uncles and how they all are. Anyway, this poem is called An Episode from Procopius, and has a little intro Norse wrote. During the reign of the Emperor, I'm going to fuck up a lot of these words because I'm from Brooklyn. During the reign of the Emperor Justinian, whose general Belisarius besieged and captured, I should have read this before I got here, besieged and captured Gelimer, the Vandal king of Africa, thereby restoring that continent to the Roman Empire after 96 years of Vandal domination. 1. I, Gelimer, on a hill in Africa, recently come to my senses, although it is late, at the end of my kingdom and my years, have this to offer to the world. Make peace. A rough barbarian, I tell you this. Make peace. The hunger in my guts is wild. My gums clack like palm fronds cracking, but I come from a strong race. I have learned in my extremity to laugh at strength. To you, Belisarius, who ask my head, I reply, thanks, not yet. Give me leave, rather, for as long as I can hold out against your legions, Lord of Byzantium, to beg 3 things. A lyre, a sponge, a loaf of bread. Bread, because it is our savage need. A sponge, because one eye is swollen from dirt. A lyre, to accompany an ode I made upon my sore affliction to make men weep. This is what I have learned, who have seized the world from Rome, bent Italy to her knees, made Caesars stain with yellow all their purple front. Make peace. 2. I saw this morning on Mount I saw this morning on Mount Papua a sight that drove all kingdoms from my head. It made me laugh so hard, weak as I was, that painful laughter put an end to war. A Moorish woman, black as pitch, had scratched some grains of corn from somewhere and had baked on the hot embers of a hearth a cake no bigger than a coin. Beside her watched her little son and my small nephew perched and parched and shriveled with desire with eyes like teeth. My nephew seized it first, and though it still smoked with flame and ash, he thrust it between his jaws. He would have swallowed it, but the other, choked with rage of famine, beat him, tore his hair until the prize disgorged from the burnt throat fell into the black boy's, and he swallowed quick. And so, my dear Belisarius, I came out to you as you see me now, still laughing hard, and I say, take Africa. Such prizes make me sick. Harold Rosen.
Thank you, Steve. And now I will invite Kathy Georges. She created this evening. Please give her a hand. She printed a beautiful program. Thank you.
Hi, thank you guys so much for coming tonight. You know, it's amazing to honor a man who's work meant so much to us, and it's really touching to see that to so many people it meant something. You know, it's like just to know that your work means something, your life means something. I always thought that Harold Norse, whom I have not met and never met, got the experience of meeting, he must have been some kind of human being. You know, his writing remains, but I just wish I could have met him. This poem is one that got William Burroughs to invite him over to the Beat Hotel. It's his famous poem, Classic Freeze in a Garage. And I was reading it, and I have to read it tonight. It's in this book. Oops. Thank you. I'm going to read this one and one poem by me about Harold Norse. It's the Outline Bible of American Poetry that also features work by Ira Cohen and Judith Molina and Julian Beck and all sorts of people. I'm in it. And so anyway, it's still available on Amazon for use. Okay. It's still available, and Alan Kaufman and S.A. Griffin published it. So I love this piece. You know, just because it makes, what he did was he was able to take, like, walking down the street and really turn it into, he was in, you know, seeing a small scene and making it hugely important. That's what this is about. I was walking through the city past umber embassies and pine-lined palaces, palm trees beside balconies, the heat, something you could touch. Past street kids with cunning, delinquent faces begging cigarettes from Americano sailors. I thought of Nerval, Ramoa la poslipe et la mer d'Italie. Of all living on the hill, poslipo above a gangster's dance floor, on the Bay of Naples in a stone cottage, over tufa caves where the sea crashed in winter. Sweet Gerard, 100 years have made the desolation greater. The tower is really down, and the sun blackened beyond despair. Loudspeakers advertise from boats on the bay, drowning out finches and roaring sea caves, all in the hands of racketeers. I have passed my time dreaming through ancient ruins, walking through crowded alleys of laundry, outside tenements with gourds and windows and crumbling masonry of wars, when suddenly I saw among the greasy rags and wheels and axles of a garage the carved nude figures of a classic frieze above dismantled parts of cars. Garage swallows sarcophagus. Mechanic calmly spraying paint on a fender observed in turn by Lapith and Senchar. The myth of the Mediterranean was in that garage where the brown, wiry youth saw nothing unusual at their work among dead heroes and gods. But I saw Hermes in the rainbow of the dark oil on the floor reflected there, and the wild hair of the Sibyl as her words bubbled, mad and drowned beneath the motor's roar. Piece. I wrote this in honor of Harold Norse. He wrote a quote that was in his book, The Fiery Force, and this is called his love poem for Harold Norse. And his quote, it starts with his quote, "The fiery force is the flame of desire and love, of sex and beauty, of pleasure and joy, as we consume and are consumed, as we burn with pleasure and burn out in time." I was amazed that he really is a self-made man. He grew up very poor. He was a dancer in ballet and then became a poet. So here it is. "You grow up poor, you grow up poor, you grow up poor in Brooklyn. And that is where the story ends for most. Not you, you bastard angel. You must escape, you dream, a boy. You must escape, you dance, a boy. You must escape, you write, a man. You write, I'm not a man. In you, a man, the fiery force. In you, the fiery force, a man. A lick feet, kick ass, suck cock and balls man. A man who sees Hermes in oil. You outlive Virgil by 3 years. Outlive friends and mentors. Burroughs, Kinsberg, Kerouac, Bukowski, Bowles, O'Hara, Duncan, Gunn. I dream of you. You dance in the sky. The end is the beginning, you say. A chorus of poets surrounds you and sings, and you laugh and leap. Escape."
Cool.
Thank you, Valerie, for helping to culturate this drama.
Thank you, Patsy.
I'm just going to thank again to all the readers, to Angela Verga, George Wallace, Ira Cohen, Judith Medina, Max Black, Shelley Miller, Jeff Seifer-Wright, Tom Walker, Steve Dalashinsky, and Kathy Georges from the Three Room Press. Thank you everybody for coming. It was a great evening. Om Shanti. Om Shanti.